Hello, and welcome to the Equitopia podcast from the horse's mouth. This is Caroline Hegarty, founder of Equitopia. Today we're going to hear from Zephania Vermeulen from Equine Studies based in the Netherlands. Zephania's background includes many forms of equine therapy and biomechanics. She has collaborated with many professionals, including the well-known Sharon May Davis, and she has studied and accumulated information and data on horse anatomy and biomechanics. I started off by asking her to tell me how she first got interested in horses.
Oh my gosh, it's going back a long, long time. When I was 2 years old, my grandparents visit us in the weekend. And always on Sunday, my neighbors had a pony club, and my granddad took me to the pony club. And I was so happy that one of the riders invited me to get on the back of the pony. And I think my Sunday was the best Sunday of my life. That's the way I think I get hooked on horses.
Again, like most people I have spoken to, one of Zephania's earliest childhood memories is a joyful one involving horses. I asked her how she decided she wanted to be involved with horses professionally.
I think when I evaluate my process with my horse. So I bought a young horse. Everybody was advising me not to do it. But I was stubborn. I fell in love with those beautiful eyes. And I bought my horse, and he was a very strong gelding. He was strong, but also his coordination was not very strong. His conformation was not very strong. And I couldn't find it in the traditional way. So I was always looking for other ways, and what I did, I was taking classes of Linda Tellington Jones, her method, and I did a course of essential oils and more homeopathy, but also I was searching for a way of training how I could manage my very strong horse. Because in a traditional way, it was kick him in the butt, put a harder bit on him, be more strict for him. And I was not happy about that. So at one point, I think I was at the age of 30. I bought him when I was 21, and I took classes in horsemanship, and I think I was 30, and I ended my horsemanship education program, and I thought, how awesome would it be to help other people with problems, behavior problems with their horses. So that's actually how I took my first step into the profession world to help other people.
Like so many others I've spoken to, Zephania's career stemmed from trying to solve a problem she faced herself. And she had a passion to share what she learned with others who could very well be trying to overcome the same challenges. This is my own story too. As a horse owner, I had struggled for years to get trustworthy knowledge and information to allow me to better care for my horses and see the results. It also has allowed me to enjoy them more and to improve their performance and my own in a way that has made the partnership thrive. I soon realized that many others were looking for the same thing. I next asked Zephania to tell me about any challenges she faced when she began working professionally with horses and how she overcame these.
In the first place, the horsemanship in Holland back then was very new. So I was a pioneer. And when you are a pioneer, you're new in your field. And people, most of the time, they are not curious about your advices or your story or whatever. And that's was the hardest part I faced, that I had to convince them that this was a very good way to help horses with behavior problems. And when I see now people have the same problem, that is that everybody is working in or studying in a kind of way in horsemanship, and there are a lot of people, so now the problem is how to find a good one. So what I found out is, if you are a pioneer or are you with Love Them, you face the same problem.
Again, this is something I've heard from others I've spoken to in this podcast series. Being a pioneer can be a lonely endeavor, and it really takes a lot of courage to persist until people start to listen and take you seriously. I asked Stefania if she ever doubted what she was doing, if she ever considered giving up working with horses.
Yeah, I want to share you a little bit about the path I chosen in what I'm doing now. And I was wondering if I choose the path or the path chose me, because back that time, I think it was around 40, we wanted to move to Australia. I'm living in Holland, and we wanted to move to Australia, and our plan didn't work out. So I was jobless, because I quitted my my work, and we moved to another part of the country. And then I had to make a choice. Do I want to start with horses again, or do I want to start a new practice for human therapy? And actually, I chose the last one, because I thought it is easier to work with people, and people came to me, and I didn't have to travel that much. So yeah, in the first place, I chose to open my human practice. There was one plan, because I couldn't move to Australia, and my friend in Australia, she is a body worker and barefoot trimmer, and we wanted to set up a rehab center in Australia for horses. And she said, okay, Stefania, if you can't come to Australia, maybe I can come over to Holland, because she was also a Dutch person. And actually, that's what we did. We set up an education center for a body worker, and I did the human hands-on guide, and she did the horse body work. So we worked together, and yeah, that's how it all started, actually.
Sounds like collaboration was the perfect solution, something we firmly believe in at Equitopia. So how did her interest in dissection come about?
At one point, my friend said, okay, I met a very great person in Australia, and her name is Sharon Davis. She's a phenomena on the area of anatomy and biomechanics on horses. And I said, okay, maybe that's a good idea to invite her to Holland, to invite her to a student, invite her to all the people, horse lovers in Holland. And that's actually how it all started. So she came to Holland, and when I organized the first dissection, I thought, oh my gosh, that's actually what I want to do for the rest of my life. Never heard so much, such a beautiful sound, how to dissect muscles. And I asked Sharon, can you teach me your profession? And she said yes. So yeah, did I choose it, or the other way around?
I next asked Stefania if she likes working alone, or if it's important for her to collaborate with other professionals.
I think an interprofessional collaboration is very helpful in my work, and maybe it is the most important collaboration in the work, because I think one person on their own, or if I do it on my own, I'm nowhere. So I have a team, and everybody use their quality in the team. And yeah, I think that makes us stronger to work together.
Next, I asked her what are some of the current challenges she faces.
Sometimes it's a lot, sometimes it's easier. The challenge I'm facing now is also about a pioneer. When we invited Sharon in Holland, the dissections were only for vets or vet schools, for physiotherapists. It was closed, and the findings were not shared with the people. And actually, we were the first company who shared it in an open class. And nowadays, a lot of people, they came to my dissection, turned it into their own, and now they running their own dissection. So that's kind of a challenge to be the best and stay the best. And that's also, what I like, because it's when you have a competition, you have to do better and be creative to getting the interest part, what people want. So that's a challenge. The challenge is that I'm not a vet, and I share my findings. Some vets don't take me seriously. A lot of vets do, but that's also a challenge. So I have, quite of a challenge.
This is a really interesting observation, and it made me think. Traditionally, social status was often linked to knowledge gained through formal university education. Just think about it. A lawyer had more status than a shopkeeper or hairdresser, even though these professionals are the ones that seem to be most valued in times like now where there is a COVID lockdown. But it seems that very often knowledge shared by a university graduate held more status than the knowledge shared by someone who had learned the same thing by some other means, especially experience. So my question is this: in today's world where new knowledge is being created and shared every day, can we reasonably accept that someone who has a 10 or 20 year old degree, even from the best university in the world, is completely up to date on every aspect of their field? I don't think so. The idea of what education is changing for sure. And this is a good thing. We do need to broaden our understanding of education and to accept that there can be such a thing as reliable knowledge that may be gained through non-formal or informal means. The challenge nowadays is to know who and what to trust, to separate reliable information from misinformation, to know how to cross-check references, triangulate sources, etc. This is what Equitopia tries to do. We look for the broadest range of knowledge from all possible sources and share what we have found to be the most reliable, so that as a horse owner, you know that due diligence has been done and that you can trust it. Moving on, I asked Stefania about her own horses and any challenges she has with them.
My own horses, oh my gosh, I have special horses and my challenging with those horses. So yeah, it is quite of a story actually, because when I moved to the place 2 years ago, it's 2 years? Yeah, 2 years ago, I put my horses down because of the confirmation. They were lame, they were off. And I had equine studies back then. And I thought, what would I do? Do I buy rehab horses with all the knowledge, I rehab them well? Or how do I search for very good and strong horses? And in 2017, I did research with Sarah May Davies about the nuchal ligament lamella and the disappearing of C6 and C7. And we found it in primitive horses or equidae, you can also call them equidae, like Koenig, Przewalski, zebra, Sharon found them in donkeys. And also we traveled to Slovenia to investigate and put them in our research about the Bosnian mountain horses. And I know that the founder of the Studbook said there are 200 species left. So I said to them, or I said to them, it's actually an agreement. I said, if your Bosnian mountain horse is that special, is closely related to the tarpan, and has all the primitive traits, I will help you to keep the breeding program and take some species to Holland. And so it did. The mare we had on the table had full nucleicum and lamella, had all the traits of primitive horses, and also 1/3 more serratus ventralis, that is a neck muscle, so they could carry more weight than all the other horses. And that's exactly today, 3 years ago, that four of my Bosnian Mountain put their feet on Holland soil. And that's how it all started. The challenging I'm facing, the biggest challenge is that the soil is different than in Slovenia. There they raised and their environment was the Alps. And so in Holland, I put them in clay. So keep them very sober and healthy, it's a challenge, because the clay, it's the area where I'm living in is an agriculture soil. So yeah, that's the most of the challenge, IRR resistance, and keep them sound and their environment, keep them creative. So what I did is I built a hill, kind of a hill, and a small pond. So yeah, to keep them in the environment, kind of environment they used to it, that's the biggest challenge, actually.
That's fascinating. What a story. I next asked her what improvements she sees in the equestrian world in the past few years.
I think the biggest improvement, what I see, is that a lot of persons who are really interested in the improvement of the environment of horses. So a lot of people building paddock paradises nowadays in Holland, and I like that so much. So they think, what do a horse need? And a horse from origin is made for moving and not for put them in a stable for most of the time. So yeah, I like that people starting more, be more creative. How can we build an environment and give them a little bit of the wild back?
Nice. And what about things that need to change?
I think we took the horse thousands and thousands years ago out of the wild, and we use them for our own economy. So we created a horse, we fed him out of a bucket, we put him in a stable, we took good care of the horse from a human perspective. But nowadays, a horse is no longer a part of the streets anymore, is no longer a part of our economy anymore. So I think it is time to give the horse a little bit of the wild back. And with that means that a horse needs to be moved. And I don't say 24 hours a day, but at least 21 hours a day, and not put the horse in the stable anymore, because that's not what a horse from original deserve.
I think it's interesting to look back so that we can really understand what horses really need. I asked Stefania what she believes the future holds for the equestrian world.
I don't know, actually. It is a hard question. sometimes I accept that the equestrian world is what it is, and sometimes I don't. So when I'm in a phase that I accept, my answer would be so different than when I'm in a phase I don't accept. This, I think it's hard for me to answer that question.
Finally, I asked her what qualities she would look for in team members, starting with the trainer.
The quality of flexibility, of thinking outside the box, because every horse is different mentally, emotionally, but most of the time is physically.
And what about vets?
I think it's the same quality. Yeah, I think it's the same quality. And the quality I'm looking for the vet is be open for what the horse owner has to say to you and believe them.
And farriers.
Look and think more like horses in the wild. I know that they are not wild horses, but yeah, from my perspective, shut horses only when it has to be. And yeah, long toe, it's not good for the biomechanics of the leg. High heel either. So think also more flexible.
What about equine behaviorists?
Also think more outside the box, because a behavior problem, most of the time, what I found out in under dissection, is a behavior problem is a physical problem or pain related.
And what about saddle fitters?
Saddle fitters, I think the quality of what they have, it's amazing. They do, from all the profession in this row, they have the hardest job. And I think a saddle fitter, the quality of a saddle fitter is what I'm looking for is keep learning, keep up your knowledge. Is it a quality? Yeah, maybe. So yeah, because they have a hard job, and the hard job is that when you fit a saddle a month later, the same perfect fitting saddle is not fitting perfectly anymore. So that's hard. And I think the quality of a saddle fitter is, yeah, I don't know how you call it in English, but continue what you're doing, because you're doing a very good job. Yeah, and love your work. Be the voice of the horses.
Like you, I'm sure I love talking about horses, and I especially love talking about horses to people who are passionate about learning how to really create a world of horses and humans in harmony. I hope you enjoyed hearing Zephania's story, and I hope that you'll tune in again next month for more from the horse's mouth.